welcome to the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sotvet.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvet.
Which makes this Scaredy Cats. The okay, there's only one ghost this time edition. So, Vicky.
Are there usually more ghosts?
I think this is the first time we've ever covered a movie that only has one ghost in it. Because Grave Encounters has multiple ghosts.
True.
What other ghost movies have we fucking covered? I don't know.
Well, I was thinking like The Ritual, but that's not a ghost, I guess. That's an ancient Norwegian god.
It's a Norse deity.
What other ghost movies have we covered? There's got to be at least one more.
I'm sure.
Oh, Dead Silence. Dead Silence is a ghost movie. Only got one ghost.
That's true.
It's got a very shaving happy Mark Wahlberg, but...
Okay, so our second there's only one ghost this time edition. So, Vicky, what's your favorite thing about the Edwardian period?
The Edwardian period. I mean, Jane Austen, probably.
Yeah?
But, well, she wrote in the Edwardian period.
Edwardian?
Yeah.
1901 to 1910?
Oh, that Edwardian. I'm thinking, the typical Edwardian period is the period before the Victorian period at the beginning of the 1800s.
I'm talking about, like, the beginning of the 1900s.
Ah.
Edwardian
period. I've never heard of that as the Edwardian period.
It's the Edwardian period.
What is my favorite thing about the first part of the 20th century? That's a different question entirely.
It's the suits and the hats, because damn did us boys look dapper AF. I just want to look like a hunter from Bloodborne is really my problem.
The suits and the hats are pretty good.
I just want to go out with like a tricorn hat on and a
personally
leather trench coat.
I'm going to go from the perspective of a Canadian historian, peak Alberta cowboy time is this period. Like this is the like 10,000 cows on the open range and like the Sundance Kid randomly working on a ranch in Alberta. I love that fact. So I'm going to go with the, like, peak Canadian cowboy moment.
Okay. Well, this movie takes place in England, so...
So both of us are relevant.
Well, the fashion is still a...
I guess.
Because that's where the fashion primarily, like, its genesis was in Europe, and then it came here.
Well, in New York.
Oh, I suppose.
By 1910, New York for sure had its
own
fashion.
Yeah. Anyway...
You gotta stop asking me historical questions on the podcast, huh? We never get to the meat.
Well, no, I do it on purpose, because I like hearing your thoughts.
Aww.
So, what do you know about The Woman in Black, which is the movie we're covering today, by the way?
I know it's got Daniel Radcliffe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene with a pool. I don't know if the ghost is in the pool? I don't know. There is a scene with a pool.
An aquatic specter.
Does it have little... I'm just imagining, haunting, like, the little flipper fins, like, webbed figures. Like, you know, Abe Sapien from Help. I'm just imagining that now.
Haunting the
But, deep, like, in a dress.
Haunting the deep end.
Yeah. As long as your feet can touch, then you're fine.
You're fine.
Really? That's it?
All right.
I know it's Daniel Radcliffe, and there's a scene with a pool. Oh, and I think a woman directed it.
Oh, no. Good try.
Wrote it?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I don't know why I sound skeptical on that. I got a lady right here.
I was like... Not a woman?
So, Woman in Black was directed by James Watkins, who hasn't done a ton that I recognize, although he did direct that one Black Mirror episode, Shut Up and Dance, which is the kid that ends up getting blackmailed by the mysterious like text messages that are instructing him to do things.
I know that Black Mirror
Or it's going to reveal that some big secret about him that we don't find out until the end of the episode.
That was one of the, like, first...
Yeah.
Episodes. I watched, like, the first, like, six, and then I was like, this just makes me feel bad about existing. I'm gonna stop watching
them. Yeah, it's not a very happy show. Although, I prefer the older episodes. I think it's...
I understand the older episodes were, like, self-contained problems, and then the newer ones just kind of go... off the rails, but I haven't seen them, so I can't back that up.
They lost the magic, I think. It was written by Jane Goldman, so yes, was written by Lady.
Nice.
Stars Mr. Daniel Radcliffe as Arthur Kipps, who is from some series that people are really passionate about that escapes me right now. I don't remember.
Okay.
Some people are really into it, though, whatever he was in.
If you are one of those listeners, I'm sorry, please tweet at us aggressively. I don't know.
Stars Misha Handley as Joseph Kipps, Arthur's son, and Claren Hines, I think is how you say that. It's Irish, I think, as Sam Daly and others. Some quick fun facts about this movie are that The Woman in Black is actually a remake of a British TV movie from 1989, which itself was based on a book of the same name written by Susan Hill in 1983. The original book, Women in Black, despite being written relatively in a modern time, was written with like a lot of gothic prose, so it's meant to be come across as a much older tale than it really is.
So it uses far too many commas?
Oh yeah. Fuck that shit up with commas.
It's true though. Every sentence in like really old literature is like half a paragraph. Because it's like, I came to this place at this time to see you, who I have longed for since I was... And it like, just goes like that for another, like, 10 lines.
Misha Handley, who plays Daniel Radcliffe's son Joseph in the movie, is his actual real-life godson. The casting was suggested by Daniel Radcliffe, who thought that the real-life connection between them would help the relationship on screen seem more authentic.
That's fun. I didn't know he had a godson.
Well, yeah, I don't know. People have got, I don't know, squat about Daniel Radcliffe. And I think he likes it that way.
I know he's...
Given his hatred of the paparazzo.
I know he's Jewish. And I know he once bought 365 identical gray shirts so he could wear them every single day so that the paparazzi couldn't take pictures because it made it look like it was all from the same day.
What a mad lad.
I know he also sometimes works as a dog walker.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I have about his personal life.
I actually really like... What I do know about Daniel Radcliffe. Like, I like him based off of what I do know about him.
I'm on board, frankly. Yeah. Like, and I feel like Daniel Radcliffe is, like, the perfect amount about a celebrity I should know.
Yeah.
It's, like, two fun facts, and I know that I don't have to hate him because he's not, like, a Nazi.
Yeah, that helps.
And that's really it. That's all I need to know about Daniel Radcliffe, yeah. And I like his acting.
Yeah, I don't seek out any more information on him, but that t-shirt fact cracked me up. What a genius.
I love it.
The movie is also filled with a lot of genuine antiques from the period.
That's fun.
For set dressing. And that's really all I got, is those three quick facts. So, Vicky, do you have anything more to say about The Woman in Black?
No.
All right.
So I know about as much about this movie as I do about Daniel Radcliffe as a person.
Which is, like, some. All right, so that is the end of part one. So we're going to go watch the movie now. We will return in part two to break it down for your ears. So stay frosty out there. Hello, and we're back with part two of The Woman in Black. So we just finished watching that movie, and now it's part of the podcast episode where we're going to get into its plot synopsis. We're going to dig into its meats, its innards.
And before we do, I was wrong. There is no scene with a pool. I was thinking of Lady in the Water, which is similarly titled and I've also known nothing about.
It's an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Shyamalan?
It's very confusing.
So, like, every other M. Night Shyamalan.
He's got some good ones.
He's like, got, like, two.
Like, we'll probably watch The Sixth Sense eventually for the podcast. Like, that's a great movie.
Okay, he's got, like, two really good movies, and then he just tries to do twists but makes confusing films.
Yeah, well.
Okay. I just wanted to acknowledge to the listeners that there was no pool scene. I didn't actually know that, because that's not a thing that happens.
So this is the part of the episode where we're going to be spoiling it. So if you want to see it, don't want it spoiled, then go watch it, you dummy.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah. So Vicky, you want to take it away?
Yeah. So we start with a very old tea party in which an unseen person is, like, pouring fake tea and helping dolls drink and very classic stuff. And we cut back... Or pull back, rather, to see it's three little girls having this tea party.
Yeah, so they're having a grand ye old time. When slowly they look out the window and clearly see something and slowly stand up and begin to walk towards the window, stepping on a porcelain cup on the way, one of the doll's heads as well. So clearly they're in some kind of trance and they make their way towards this window and open it up.
Yeah, and in perfect unison, the three of them jump out, and a woman starts screaming,
and we cut to
some fog.
Yeah.
And so then we don't ever deal with those children again.
Title card. Well, we do, because...
No, the title card is while they're having a tea party. We don't even get the tea party.
No, it's after they kill themselves.
No.
Yes.
Because while they're having the tea... We have the, like, directed by cards and stuff in the mist.
After we're done recording, we're going to go back and rewatch the whole movie.
So
then we transition to our main man, Arthur Kipps. After a shave, he's looking in the mirror, and he thinks he sees his dead wife's reflection in that mirror, but when he turns around, she's gone.
And the whole time he's shaving, he looks very upsetty spaghetti.
Yeah, he's not a happy fellow. In fact, nobody in this movie is particularly joyous.
No. Even the camera isn't... It's a very, like, gray, blue, black...
It's bleak.
It's sad. Anyway.
It's England.
He closes his suitcase and heads downstairs to his son, Joseph, who is showing him a drawing because Arthur is leaving for a couple days, and then the son and the nanny are going to come visit him. And his son is like, look at this picture I drew of you, Daddy. And Arthur's like, why am I frowning? And Joseph's like, no, that's just what your face looks like.
Because that's just what you look like. And it's revealed that Arthur is going to be going to work at this small town in the countryside. And he's going to go ahead and be there for a few days. And then on Friday, his son Joseph and the nanny are going to come meet him.
Yes. So we cut to Arthur at his lawyer's office. This is when we learn he's a lawyer. And he's getting a warning about, you know, you got to step up your work. And this is kind of his last... job that they're offering. He's got to prove he's dedicated, and he's got to go execute a will for a widow who died in Eel House Marsh, which is not an attractive estate name.
No, it is not. And the Eel House is located in a small English village called Crithin Gifford.
Crithin Gifford.
Crithin Gifford, yeah.
They say it like once really fast.
Crithin Gifford. Yeah, but his boss is like, you can't yuck this up, man, Arthur, or else you're gonna get fired. And so he leaves his office, and we see that he's on a train now, and he's kind of transitioning with him sitting on the train back and forth between flashbacks of his wife giving birth to Joseph.
Well, he's actually in the hallway, and we hear the screaming of his wife giving birth. He doesn't actually see her. And then the nurse is like, congrats, it's a son. And he's like, wow, amazing. And then the doctor's like, also your wife died. And he's like, that's less amazing.
Mm-hmm. Now, actually, on the train, heading to the town.
Well, he's on the train the whole time he's having this flashback.
Well, he's on a train platform, and it's raining, and then he's on the train, and
but
then
he's like
off
sleeping
the train.
On the train, and we cut between him sleeping, and then, because then he wakes up on the train and has a conversation with Samuel Daly.
Yes. So, and the man who does introduce himself to Samuel Daly is like, you're here to try and sort out the Eel Marsh house. And he tells him that he's unlikely to find a local buyer. Like, nobody from the area is going to even touch the place. But he doesn't really elaborate on it any further, but he offers to give Arthur a ride to the inn that he's going to be staying at once they arrive, because he lives in town as well.
He's got the only car in town.
Yes.
He also invites Arthur to dinner the next day, and Arthur's like, seems great, and heads into the inn, and he's like, Arthur Kipps, my office telegraphed you. And they're like, nope, they absolutely did not. And also, we have no room, and you need to leave right now immediately.
Yeah, they're very prickly to him. They clearly don't want him to be staying. However, one of the inn ladies, I guess.
Mrs. Fisher.
Mrs. Fisher is like...
I think she's the wife.
Yeah, and she's like, well, we can't just send him out in the piss and rain out there. Like, he'll have to stay in the attic, though, but there's an attic room. And takes him up there.
And he's like, I was kind of hoping to stay for a week, which is why we telegraphed ahead. My son is coming on Friday. And she's like, maybe don't bring your son out here. And we also see a bird who squawks and says, in the mist, in the mist. And the bird will be briefly relevant for one scene later, and then we're never going to talk about the bird again.
Yeah, so later we see Arthur walking around town, and the locals are being very, very bristly at him. They're hiding their kids, they're glaring at him from afar, and Arthur's like, huh.
Tom turned to me about halfway through the movie and goes, how many gothic horrors do you think are set in a small English town where there's a secret that the main character doesn't know?
The main character from London who has been sent on some business to some small town with some secret. Like, yeah, that's every frickin'...
I was just like, that's the whole genre,
that's
Thomas.
All
You've
of
identified it.
It. Yeah.
So Arthur is on his way to meet Mr. Jerome, who's the lawyer of this town?
Yeah, or at least the legal authority in the area.
He's the only person Arthur has been directed to contact.
And yeah, and Arthur was told by his boss back in London that they've been trying to work with Mr. Jerome on settling this estate, but Mr. Jerome hasn't been playing ball. So Arthur goes and meets with him, and Jerome once again reiterates that he doesn't want Arthur to go to the Eel Marsh house.
In fact, here's my sheaf of papers.
Yeah.
Go back to London.
Yeah, like, I've hired a driver for you. He's going to take you to the train station. Here's your ticket.
Leaves in half an hour.
Have a nice trip.
And Arthur is like, come again? But he's already outside. Mr. Jerome is no longer answering his question.
And so Arthur goes up to the driver who has been summoned to take him to the train station and is like, how about for 4 shillings you take me to the Eel Marsh house instead? And the driver's like, Make it five and you got yourself, or make it six and you got yourself a deal, Mamacita.
And also, for some reason, everyone in this movie is dressed like they're in, like, 1900, except for the carriage driver, who's got, like, very medieval peasant head gear and, like, plain woven linen coat.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It was weird. It was almost like, and this is your ghost carriage driver to drive you to the ghost house. He's not actually a ghost. It was just the rest of the movie is in 1900 and that guy's in like 1585.
Well, it's, and we see maybe why it is that he doesn't wear the fanciest clothes, because as he takes Arthur to the Eel Marsh house, we get these big sweeping shots of the marsh that surrounds this place. And it's really more of a small ocean. You can't even really see
of mud,
land or anything. It's just muddy water, in all directions. And this tiny little road that goes, up to this secluded mansion on its very own little island.
Yes, and so Arthur gets off, and the guy, and he's like, can you meet me at 3? And the carriage driver's like, nope, tide. I can be here at 5, and Arthur's like, I guess?
Yeah, explains to him that when the tide comes in, the road is inaccessible. You can't use it, and so he's gonna have to wait till the tide comes out at 5 to pick him up. Arthur's like, alright, that'll do, and moves up the island through the bush towards the dilapidated manor.
With some standard spooky crows cawing as he does so.
Brawl.
And then he steps into the house, and it's a standard spooky old house. Lots of paintings, no light, thick layer of dust, some cobwebs.
He also finds a oil lamp that seems to still have some fuel in it, and as he is fiddling around with that, some goop splashes out of a nearby pipe into a, like,
sink,
I guess.
It's a sink. I think it's a faucet. Spooky sludge. And spooky sludge sink.
We're all supposed to be spooked by the sludge, but I wasn't.
It's just marsh sludge.
It's just sludge. And he goes and finds the documents in this home that he is supposed to be going through.
Well, some of them. There's a lot of documents everywhere.
Yeah, and he sets himself up in the parlor.
Yeah, and so we cut to outside briefly and see, like, the marsh tide coming in, cutting off the road, which is then not relevant to us because Arthur finds a death certificate for a Nathaniel who drowned in the marsh when he was 7, and whose body was not recovered. And he's like, wild. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to talk about that for a while.
And he also finds some birthday cards written to Nathaniel from somebody named Jeanette. Specifically the boy that drowned was Mrs. Drablow's son, who is the widow that owned this house. The estate that he's here to settle is Mrs. Drablow's estate. And while he's going through these documents, he hears a thudding sound upstairs and moves to investigate.
Yeah, so he comes across a locked door, which we will later learn goes to the nursery.
Joan
was spooked by the nursery.
Yeah.
And he reaches forward and grabs the doorknob, which is covered in marsh sludge, which he is frankly not particularly concerned. And it's, like, wet. It's not caked on, but he's not, like, wild. Why is there wet marsh mud on this here doorknob from this dead woman's house? He's like, huh, and then doesn't even wipe his hand off. He just carries on.
He's like, that's gross. Anyway, in another room, he encounters what appears to be a small little baba raven on the ground.
Little crow nest.
A little crow nest that is, like, fallen down the...
It's unclear if the nest fell down the chimney or if it was built in the fireplace and the bird just fell out. Either way, he puts the little baby back in, and immediately there is a much larger crow, which is presumably the parent.
The mama crow's like, bitch, you better don't touch my child. And Arthur's like, okay, respect. Game recognized game. And,
game recognized game. Okay, crow, you and I, we got an understanding.
And as he goes to leave the crow and her babies alone, he thinks he sees something out the window. And as he goes to investigate that, he hears a screaming outside and goes to run after it.
Oh, I thought he was opening the window to let the crow fly in and out and then spots the lady on, like, the grounds. And he's like, huh, I should go look for her. And then he hears the screaming.
That sounds like a better way to have those events happen.
All right, let's assume I'm right then.
All
right. So he's... goes out to look for this lady, and I gotta say, it's very Fall of the House of Usher vibes, the, like, bleak marsh and the mist, and frankly, the Fall of the House of Usher is a better marsh ghost story, but that's my personal opinion.
Fall of the House of Usher is great. But yeah, it's totally misty, can't see a thing, but he hears what sounds like a crash, like a carriage crash somewhere out on the road, but he's not able to locate it, and eventually stumbles upon a small graveyard instead, that is
no,
on this
island.
No,
he doesn't find the graveyard yet. That's not until he has the dog.
Yep. He finds a grave that was passed by earlier.
Oh, it's not a grave. It's like a little cross stuck in the the marsh mud.
Right, right.
Because there is actually graves, but they're not here yet. That's why I was confused.
Right. So yeah, on the way to the manor house, on the side of the road in the marshes, there's like a cross erected in the goop.
Yeah, and we hear voices that are saying like, "Get the boy," and it's heavily implied based on the death certificate we found that this is kind of flashbacks of the carriage accident where Nathaniel drowned in the marsh. Mm-hmm.
And we as the viewers are shown a couple quick shots of the cart tipped over and a child struggling to keep his head above the mud. But Arthur doesn't see this. And as he arrives back to, or rather, as he's stumbling through the mists, he ends up running into the cart driver, who's back to take him into town.
Yeah, and in town, he's in the local constabulary.
The constable.
Well, he's not in the constable. That would be a very different genre of film.
Climbs on inside.
No.
Okay.
But he is trying to tell the constable that he heard an accident, and the constable's like, no, nobody goes that way. And Arthur's like, no, it was a carriage accident. And the constable's like, I have to go check some paperwork in the back, leaving you conveniently alone.
I need to leave the scene. And so he turns and...
it really is, I need to leave it. He has no reason. He's like, I will be back, and leaves.
And so he steps out of the room, and as Arthur is left to his own devices, these three children arrive. One of them looking very, very sick.
Yeah, it's two brothers kind of propping up their sister, and he's like, oh, is everything okay? And one of the kids is like, my sister drank lye. And while Arthur is yelling for the constable, the child, who we will later learn tangentially is named Victoria, but again is not particularly relevant, coughs up some blood and that's it.
And dies in Arthur's arms because don't drink lye.
Yet, it's frankly really good we don't just have lye
lying around anymore.
Also, childproof caps, pretty helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure don't drink lye.
Don't do that. And back at the inn, Arthur is clearly shaken.
Just before the inn, sorry. It's, he watches from a distance while the townsfolk kind of inform the mother that the child has died. The mother wasn't home at the time. And a lot of the townsfolk are giving him very dirty looks while this woman is, like, screaming about her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to the inn.
So, yeah, back at the inn, Arthur is, I think, having a drink? I don't know.
He hears crying and goes upstairs, but it's the bird mimicking the crying.
Yes.
And then Mrs. Fisher is like, can I pour you a drink?
Yeah, and while they're sitting with their drinks, Mrs. Fisher begs Arthur not to return to the Eel Marsh house, tells him, and she also is like, you got a child? And he's like, yeah, I got this little boy named Joseph, he's dope as hell.
And does some sweet drawings.
She's like, well, cherish him and love him.
And if you love him, don't be here.
Yeah, be somewhere else. And he's like, but I'm here because I love him, because I need to keep my job.
At which point I started wondering if everyone knows that the village children die at an outrageous frequency, why do they still live in this tiny, sad marsh village?
Yeah, anyway, the next day, Arthur goes to meet Mr. Daly at for supper, I guess, at the graveyard, where he is standing in front of a mausoleum. He tells Arthur that his son is buried there.
Yeah.
Their, like, 7-year-old kid who drowned.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he's like, no, it was a long time ago. And as they're walking to the house, Mr. Daly is like, now, Arthur, just don't, like, mention dying children or living children or just, like, the concept of children to my wife.
Mm-hmm, because she's a little sensitive. So he goes and meets Mrs. Daly, who insists that Arthur stay with them instead of at the inn because he has been sleeping in this attic. And so she's like, that won't do.
Well, I think the inn turned him out too, didn't they? They were like, you can't stay here anymore.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, he's going to be staying with the Dalys now. And she's also got a couple good boys.
Yeah, she's like, do you mind if we eat with the twins? And he's like, no. And she's like, great. And then comes back with like two little chihuahuas in matching sailor suits.
Yeah,
I don't think they're chihuahuas, but I don't know what they are.
They're tiny, tiny dogs.
They're very small, and they match.
And I love them.
And Mr. Daly is just like, I'm so sorry about my wife with the twin dogs in sailor suits. Mm-hmm.
And they sit down to dinner, and Mrs. Daly immediately, without skipping a beat, is like, so dead children.
I hear this movie needs some exposition on those. May I fill you in?
Yeah, and she mentions that her son, who is dead now, loved to draw, motioning up to a painting that she did of him, being like, I'm very crafty, and my son was crafty too. And then she looks at him and is like, and he's still crafty.
Yeah, and then she's like, watch, he wants to draw you something. And then appears to be maybe possessed by the son and starts, like, carving with her knife on the table as Mr. Daly starts yelling for the butler to bring the medication, which appears to be some sort of chloroform.
Bring the chloroform! The horse tranquilizer!
Also, can I just say, the fact that the two premier dead children of this film are Nathaniel and Nicholas was not particularly helpful.
Friggin' Bible names.
I mean, you could have, there's lots of Bible names you could go for that are not, and you could have a James.
Hey, there's a ton of gold names in the Bible that have been underutilized. We're
Nebuchadnezzar.
We're all fucking obsessed with like the Jameses and the Johns and the Abrahams. Where's Nebuchadnezzar? Where's Saul?
Well, he became Paul, which is a pretty common name.
Yeah, I guess.
They got a lot of Peters. Thomases. They do have a lot of Thomases. You're it? A Thomas.
Agamemnon.
Agamemnon? That's Agamemnon. A Greek king who is not related to the Bible, but is very...
Isn't he in the Bible?
No, Agamemnon is the Trojan War fam.
Oh, right. Oh, man. Getting all my old timeies mixed up in my head.
Yeah. Going back to the woman in black, though.
Yeah. And so after Mrs. Daly is tranquilized, Arthur and he sit in the study having a drink and talking about mysticism. And Arthur talks about how he didn't really believe in that kind of stuff until his wife died. And, like, since she died, he sometimes feels like she's still with him. And Mr. Daly's like, poppycock!
Yeah, he's like...
It's all ridiculous.
And there's sort of hints that Mr. Daly has perhaps encountered seances himself.
Mm-hmm.
But we get a really very quick, like, 5-second flashback of Arthur's wife in her wedding gown?
Yeah, I don't know.
She's got a veil and it's a white dress, so I'm gonna assume it's a wedding gown. But then Arthur is upstairs and is like, I'm gonna go get the drawing my son made, because frankly all these dead children are whacking me right out.
Yeah.
And then he passes Mrs. Daly putting the chihuahuas to bed in a crib.
Yeah, she's like doting over these chihuahuas in a crib, which is probably the strangest scene in the movie.
It's very clear she has replaced Nicholas with these matching sailor suit chihuahuas to cope.
It stuck out to me for some reason.
On a side note, if for whatever reason we have a tragedy and I choose to like get some matching chihuahuas and put the... Please just take me to a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of chloroforming me about it, just take me to a therapist.
I promise.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
If I ever have that specific problem.
Later, Arthur and Mr. Daly are driving to Mr. Jerome's office. And this is when Arthur explains to Mr. Daly that he has to finish this paperwork or else he's going to be fired. And so they arrive at Jerome's office, but the guy doesn't seem to be home.
Yeah, and so he's looking around, but he sees some flickering beneath the floorboard. So he heads downstairs and finds a cellar door with a peephole in it. So he starts looking through the peephole.
Starts peeping through that peephole. And
because that's what normal people do, right? Oh, peephole, better looking.
I mean, if I encountered like a random ass peephole, yeah. That's what they're designed for. They're meant for peeping.
In a house that, like, you're not necessarily supposed to be in? That you're snooping in?
Anyway, it appears to be a bedroom behind this locked door, and nobody seems to be home until suddenly there is somebody home, and it's a spooky little girl who yells at Arthur and tells him that it's his fault that Lucy died?
Victoria
died.
She is Lucy.
Right. It's his fault that Victoria died.
Yeah, it's his fault she drank lye.
Yeah, which Arthur's like...
Arthur's like, no, it's not.
That ain't my fault.
You're lying. Get it, because she drank lye. So she's lying about him. Anyways. Thanks for the pity snicker, I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So Mr. Daly is like, I'll drive you to the house since Mr. Jerome is choosing to deal with you by simply not being here. But they encounter a group of village men on the road.
A blockade of angry rabble being roused.
It's like 8 guys.
Yeah, I know. They're shouting at them, telling Arthur that it's his fault that the little girl died as well because he saw the woman.
Yeah, and he's like, huh? And Mr. Daly's like, okay, I will take him back to the station. So he starts backing up, and then instead of going to the station, guns it, scattering the gentlemen. And they carry on towards Eel Manor.
The Eel Marsh House, yeah.
Eels live in marshes?
Probably.
I'm going to Google that later.
Okay. This is part of the movie where I'm like, everybody knows this superstition. Why aren't they just fucking telling him?
Well, like... that's like when earlier I was like, Why do they all just live here if their children die?
Well, but like, I get that, because it's clearly a problem you can deal with as long as you don't go to the Eel Marsh house, right? Because seeing the lady causes the children to die. And so if you know a guy from out of town is here to be in that house, instead of just being like, oh, we don't have room at the inn, you'd be like, no, don't go there. You'll kill our children.
I am pleased to report to you there is a species called swamp eels that do indeed live in swamps and marshes and will bury themselves in the mud if it dries out too much.
Well, we can all sleep more soundly at night now, knowing this.
At the house, Mr. Daly is like, I'll come back and get you later. And Arthur is like, actually, I'm just going to stay overnight to get it done. And Mr. Daly's like, well, okay, keep Spider the dog with you then.
It's dangerous to go alone. Take this.
It's a very nice looking terrier.
Gives him a good boy. Later, Arthur heads back into the house and tries to unlock the door on the second floor of the nursery, but none of the keys that he's been given to the place will fit.
No.
And as he continues to wander around, under a bed, he finds a box containing Nathaniel Drablow's things. That's the boy who drowned.
Yeah, it's got his name in, like, big letters. And there's also a bunch of, like, scattered papers as well under there. And there's a noise, so he looks up, and there's a hand on the window of the bathroom.
Oh, no. But then it's gone when he goes to look again. But not really taking that to be anything. He moves to the washroom to investigate further, but finds absolutely nothing there.
No. Wow. So he's now sitting at the desk with ever more papers. And there's a bunch of them with, like, scattered random drawings and scrawlings on them, but we don't really get to see what any of them mean.
No, and this weird, like, little picture show thing that's, like, a...
Daguerreotype.
Is that what it's called? Daguerreotype? It's, like, a primitive flip book.
Yeah, it's got a light in the middle, and if you spin it really fast, it appears to make a...
Animation moving, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he finds one of these and gets it spinning and is watching it. And sees suddenly an eye appear in there.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I don't like that. But I'm not going to choose to investigate it. I'm going to go look at some papers some more.
Well, he looks up and the eye's gone. And so he's like, must be all the cocaine I'm taking.
So much cocaine.
Because of the time period.
Snuff also would be doing a lot of snuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you've got the bit on your hand called the snuff box.
Oh, yeah.
The little dent at the base of your thumb. It's called the snuff box because that's where you... snort snuff out of.
Yeah.
And I just love that we as a species did that so often we named an anatomical part of our body for it.
That's my drug hole. So we get some pretty shots of the flooded road and some birds. And the dog Spider is the dog's name?
Yeah.
Starts barking at something outside, which leads Arthur to go and arrive at the graveyard just outside of the house.
Yes, which is what I thought you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I got mixed up. While he's wandering between the graves, he looks back up at the house and sees a face in the window staring at him.
And the two graves in particular that the movie is like, look at this grave, do you see the grave?
Look at this epitaph.
Are for Nathaniel, which of course we know is empty, the body wasn't recovered, and for Jeanette, who we know vaguely is the sister of Alice, but we're about to get the backstory on Jeanette.
Yeah, and like Jeanette also is the one that had written all these cards to Nathaniel that we've been seeing throughout the movie.
Yes, so in the house, he does not find whatever spooky woman was looking at him, but he does find a new trunk of letters. Oh my god, there's so many trunks of letters in this film.
A lot of documents and shit. But while he goes and he ends up looking out the exact same window that the lady was watching him from, and we see the lady standing behind him for a couple of shots, but then when he turns around, she's gone and he is none the wiser.
Yes, so he's going through this newest trunk, and we get a series of letters, which fortunately the movie does not attempt to make us read. It just reads it to us, and they are letters from Jeanette, a series of them, and we come to understand that Alice, Jeanette's sister, has had doctors declare Jeanette mentally unfit so she can forcibly adopt Nathaniel from Jeanette. Jeanette is Nathaniel's real mom. And in another letter, Jeanette accuses Alice of not letting her see her son, and then...
not giving him the cards that she's been writing for him. And we also see that she self-murdered.
Yes,
well... she hung herself.
There's one more letter where she accuses Alice of not even trying to save Nathaniel or trying to recover his
body. After he died, yeah.
Yeah, it's... she suggests that Alice actually has no interest in Nathaniel, she just wants to hurt Jeanette. And then we get the death certificate, which the movie does not read to us. It's just like, self-murder by hanging in the nursery.
With the candlestick.
No, it'd be the rope if it's hanging.
Yeah, I know.
Rope is a weapon in Clue, right?
I think so. Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It's got to
be. Okay. I said that, and then I was like, shit, I haven't played Clue in like 10 years. I hope that's right. Arthur is clearly disturbed by these findings. He's got like a hand over face, which, like, fair. I would also be upset if I found this series of letters.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, that's a bummer. While he is sitting and being bummed out, there is a shadow moving around behind him, and the dog Spider begins to growl.
Yeah, and just before these kind of shadowy shadow hands grab Arthur, he kind of jerks himself awake because he hears a banging upstairs.
Actually, the thing retreats because the dog starts barking.
Oh, I for sure thought it was because he woke up.
Now, Spider barks, which scares the shadows away, and then Arthur hears weird movement that seems to be coming from behind this locked door. A banging, which is getting louder and faster.
Yes, so he goes, but the nursery is still locked. No goop on it this time, though, and he's like, I'm about sick of these fucking noises. I'm gonna go get an axe. And he gets an axe, and he comes back upstairs. But not only is the door now not locked, it is in fact open.
Mm-hmm. So he cautiously approaches, grabbing a candle to light his way. So he's dual-wielding, axe in one hand, candle in the other, ready to rock. Gets into the nursery to find that all that clamor is just a rocking chair, slowly moving back and forth on its own.
Which, like, to be fair, rocking chairs do not do.
No.
So he's investigating the nursery, and he finds a tear in the wallpaper, and rips the top layer of wallpaper off, uncovering the words, "You could have saved him," written in blood.
Whoa! And one of the toy monkeys begins to start shaking his maracas.
Yeah, and
a lot of the scares in this movie are like random toy activating in this corner or whatever.
They really are. He looks out the window and sees the woman in black walking on the road, but when he goes up to the window, her face appears on the other side and screams. At which point, downstairs, Spider the dog starts barking again.
Yeah,
this dog is so good at barking. He's such a good little puppy actor.
Good dog. Arthur goes down to find that the front door is being rattled. The doorknob is being messed with. He calls out to whoever it is on the other side, and the rattling stops momentarily before resuming a little bit more, with a little bit more verve.
Yeah, so verve is such a good word.
It is.
He pulls the door open and steps out into the rain, and there's no one there. But as the storm continues, lightning flashes begin to illuminate dead children, including the three girls from the beginning, Nicholas and Victoria.
And some other dead kids.
Yeah, well, that's why I said including, because we don't know who the rest of them.
Yeah, lots of dead kids. Spooked by all that, he's like, I don't want to deal with any of you. And so he makes his way back into the house, back to the nursery, because he's hearing some noises coming from there. And this entire sequence is actually a little bit like, I don't know, frustrating, because it literally is just him stumbling from room to room as, like, slightly spooky things happen to him.
The problem is not even that, like, Daniel Radcliffe is not acting believably, it's that the writing has given him nothing to do with these scares. He's doing a great job of looking progressively more concerned.
Mm-hmm. But he's a very passive passenger. It's almost like he is strapped into a, like, haunted house ride or something. And
yeah, like, there's no consequences for any of the spooky things, and they don't actually interact with him. They're just spooky. Honestly, the biggest problem of this movie is that it's the writing is exposition and random spooky things, and they never quite connect the exposition and the spooky things well.
Well, they sort of do towards the end. But anyway, Arthur gets into the nursery where Jeanette's body suddenly falls from the ceiling, hanging on a noose, and there are little ghost children running every which way around the mansion.
Yes.
Little tip-taps, their feets.
He drops the candle when Jeanette's body falls, and when he relights it, a marsh mud-covered face is screaming right in front of him, and he's like, nope! And runs to the bedroom. But he can't hide there because the sheets start moving and a marsh ghost starts marshing.
A goop boy begins to rise up from the bed sheets. So he flees from the bedroom downstairs and finds Mr. Daly waiting for him at the door.
Yeah, because it's morning.
Because it's morning. And Arthur spent, I guess, all night just wandering from spooky room to spooky room.
It is unfortunate because I feel like with like the like running to the bedroom and the marsh kid like starting to rise up, it's like starting to be like directed at him, but then that scene ends, so it's like there's potential but it never quite connects.
So driving back to town, Arthur tells Mr. Daly about what he saw, but Mr. Daly's still like, nah man, it's all the cocaine you're taking.
And the snuff.
And the snuff. They arrive back in town to find Mr. Jerome's house burning down.
And the Jeromes screaming for their daughter Lucy, the girl Lucy! Who's downstairs.
Arthur clearly starting to clue in on what's going on here, and perhaps feeling a little bit guilty for being at that Marsh house. And
I think also just genuinely wanting to save a child.
Yeah, being a general bro, runs into the burning building Spider-Man 1 style to try and find the little girl in the basement. He arrives there. And manages to bust down the door to see her kind of standing there, not making any effort to save herself, with an oil lamp in her hands.
Yeah, and as he watches, she looks towards the corner where the woman in black has appeared, Jeanette, we now know at this time, and drops the lamp at her feet, setting herself on fire with, frankly, the most amazing rapidity I have seen someone ever set themselves on fire. But before Arthur can do anything about this, the beams start falling down, and he is forced to retreat to outside, where all of the townsfolk give him increasingly dirty looks.
Yeah, yeah. And then later, Arthur and Mr. Daly are having a shell-shocked drink together after, and Arthur reiterates that he saw the woman in black, but Mr. Daly is still like, can't be.
You need a nap.
Mr. Daly's like, the Scully.
Of X-Files?
Yeah.
Okay, Mulder, he's whatever like, you say.
You're crazy.
That afternoon, Arthur is going for a walk and sees Mrs. Daly at the mausoleum. And he's like, hey, what actually ever happened to Nicholas? And Mrs. Daly is like, oh, you need more exposition? Allow me to sort you out.
Allow me to, in fact, give you all of the exposition. So she tells Arthur that the woman in black is seen whenever a child in the village dies. And whenever anybody has seen the woman in black, that has meant that a child is most certainly going to be killed violently or in some horrible accident.
Yes, and he mustn't blame himself because nobody took the pains to inform him this was like a well-known ghost problem that the town has.
Which again, like what? What?
She then lists 6 or 7 children, and including her own son, who she says the woman in black lured out to the ocean where he drowned, and then appears to be possessed by
her son.
All of the child ghosts?
I think it's just her son. But she starts speaking in her son's voice, who says that the woman in black compelled them to walk into the water. And we get to see a scene of these two boys in their swimming suits. That, much like the little girls, actually, just get dead in the face all of a sudden, step over the sandcastle they were building and walk towards the water. She also pulls out, I don't know what it is.
She finds charcoal, I think, on the ground.
Or like a rock. But she grabs a rock and begins to scratch onto the mausoleum a picture.
Like she did at the table.
Exactly.
At which point Mr. Daly arrives and kind of grabs her and comforts her. And Arthur, looking at her scratch drawings, realizes it is a drawing of himself and Joseph, who is supposed to arrive today.
Yeah, specifically, it's like a facsimile of Joseph's drawing from the beginning of the movie that Arthur's been keeping with him this entire time.
Yes, realizing that this means Joseph is next on the kill list, Mr. Daly rushes him to town in the car, but the telegraph office is closed.
No!
So Arthur is like, okay, we gotta go to the marsh and recover Nathaniel's body, and maybe if we bury it properly, Jeanette will not try to murder my son.
Yeah, and so I guess what this movie is saying is that, like, everybody knows where the body in the cart is, but because it's
a marsh, you can't get it out. Well, I think that's where the cross is supposed to mark, because, like, the carriage won't move in a marsh, right?
Yeah.
It just can't be
lifted back out of there, because suction.
We don't have pneumatic cranes yet.
No. And so, but Arthur's like, but you got a car, and nobody else in the village has a car, so maybe we can tow the cart out of the marsh and get that body, and then maybe if we get the body back to Jeanette, all this will be okay. And Mr. Daly's like, still don't believe you, but okay.
No, I think he's fairly convinced by this point.
He's convinced at this point, you're right, because his wife speaks to him in this demonic voice as well.
Yeah, and it's
at the mausoleum, yeah.
And does he see Nicholas? No, he sees Nicholas later. Anyways, when they get to the marsh, Arthur ties himself to the car and starts slurping out into the marsh mud.
Swim into the muck.
And it's gross. And then he's like, I feel it, Mr. Daly. Hang on while I tie it. And he says that he's actually standing on top of the carriage, which gives you some indication also of why it's so hard to get this carriage out. It's a very deep marsh.
Sunk down pretty far. And so Arthur dips back into the mud, and Mr. Daly kind of waits and waits and waits, and he doesn't come back up, and then he's like, uh-oh. So he begins to put the car into reverse, and slowly and agonizingly the cart that has been sunk is unearthed from the muck, and Arthur is riding it.
Yeah, and it's unclear that they are pulling out the carriage specifically until the actual carriage appears. Like, you think they're just going for Nathaniel. But Arthur is... There's basically a very quick conversation of yelling where Arthur is like, keep the car there just long enough for me to, like, grab the boy. Because, like, they can't pull the carriage all the way out.
Mm-hmm. And so Arthur's like, I got him here, but he's having trouble pulling him loose. And the cart begins to sink back down into the muck because Mr. Daly's given her all she's got, Captain, but there's not much, so, but he does manage to finally, pull, Nathaniel. Young Nathaniel's corpse from out of the, cart.
See, I'm telling you, Nathaniel and Nicholas, it's confusing. I always had to look at it, I was like, which name am I writing down?
Now back at the house, Arthur is, freshening up, because he was all covered in goop. And he says that Jeanette and her son are lost and need to find each other, then they can bury them together. And maybe that'll fix it.
Yes, and Mr. Daly is like, not convinced, but okay. So Arthur takes the body upstairs to the nursery, and he sets it on the bed, and he starts, like, scattering the birthday cards around it and lays a rosary on top of him and, like, turning on all the toys. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to coax Jeanette.
He's trying to set the mood. Get a real maternal vibe going on.
Sure. Downstairs, Mr. Daly sees the ghost of his son, Nicholas, which if he wasn't convinced before, he sure as fuck is now.
Mm, so chases him into a room, but the boys are gone. Where did he go? I don't know. Oh, he's behind me. And then the door swings shut. And
yes.
Now Mr. Daly is locked in this room.
Yes, and he calls for Arthur, but Arthur is upstairs in the nursery and the rocking chair is starting to rock and shadows are starting to appear in the hall.
And all the lights that are in the house, the candles begin to extinguish one by one. And suddenly the lady in black appears screaming and jumps at Arthur, who moves out of the way, falling to the ground.
I wrote he did a sick dodge.
Sick dodge, Arthur.
At this point, the ghost appears to just kind of bypass him and vanish into Nathaniel.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Daly arrives on the scene, having let himself out of the locked room?
Yeah, I don't know. He escaped somehow. That's the sequel.
Yeah. And Arthur is like, Jeanette is gone. We can go bury Nathaniel now. So they're cracking open the, like, stone top of Jeanette's grave and opening the coffin to a very decomposed Jeanette. And putting Nathaniel in there. One thing I did appreciate about this movie is Jeanette is very decomposed, but Nathaniel is not, which is correct in a marsh, because a marsh will preserve a body for a real ass long
time.
That's
why we got bog bodies.
Well, bog is different than a marsh, but they will both preserve you.
Well, yeah, same.
Same concept.
Anyway, so now that the business seems to be all done, Mr. Daly and Arthur go to the train platform to meet Arthur's son and the nanny.
Yes, who have arrived safely. It's great, and Arthur gives Joseph a hug and is like, Joseph, this is my friend Samuel, which is Mr. Daly, and asks the nanny to get them tickets back to London. They're not staying here, they are going straight home.
And he's going to explain on the way, and while they're talking, slowly the audio gets more and more muted until we can't really hear Arthur or Mr. Daly's conversation, as we see Arthur's son get kind of dead in the eyes. And
yes. No one is paying attention to him, because the nanny's off getting the tickets, and the two adults are talking, so mm-hmm. he's free to just kind of mindlessly start wandering towards the train tracks.
Yeah, and oh boy, there's a train coming. And Arthur turns and sees the woman in black standing on the opposite platform to him and notices his son is walking down the tracks and the train is coming. And so he leaps onto the train tracks to grab his son and jump out. But the train moves over top of them. And Mr. Daly looks on in horror as he sees also the woman in black standing on the other side of the platform between the train.
And all the dead children in the background.
Yeah, and all the dead kids.
Yeah, and the nanny looks horrified. And then we don't see the bodies, just Mr. Daly and the nanny looking horrified. But then we cut to Arthur holding Joseph, and they don't see anybody.
Yeah, and they all seem just fine. They don't seem injured at all, but looking around, yeah, the train station is empty. Nobody is around.
No. And it's very obvious they're dead. Like, they for sure got, like, nailed by the train.
Smoked by the train, yes. That's R.I.P. Arthur and R.I.P. Joseph.
And Joseph asks Arthur who that lady is, and we're like, oh no, it's the lady in black. Except, it's not.
No. And Arthur says, that's your mummy. And they turn, and that is Arthur's wife.
In her white dress. They're family again. Cute little ghost family.
Yeah, and so they go up and smile at each other, and then hand in hand walk into a gray mist that has started to build on the train tracks. And then we kind of fade to black and are given one last shot of the woman in black's face looking, staring somberly at us.
Yeah, and I'm...
And then the movie ends.
It does, and I'm still really confused what exactly that last shot is supposed to convey, because it's not like Jeanette looking angry. It's almost like she's, like, I can't tell if it's supposed to be like, now that a family has been reunited, she feels better, and, or like, ha, you got what was coming to you. Like, there's, it's very unclear.
I really do think it's just like, here's one last look at our spooky antagonist.
That's fair.
I think that's really all it is. So anyways, that was The Woman in Black. Now is the part of the episode where we're going to give it some ratings because we're judgmental bitches that like that.
Word.
Oh, yeah. So, Vicky, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well made was this movie?
I'm gonna give it, like, a 6. It suffers from everything has to be so dark and either black, gray, blue, or brown, so it's really hard to see what's going on, and like the acting is really good, like Daniel Radcliffe does a great job, but the writing doesn't really give him anything to go with. Mm-hmm. So like I feel like the movie got 3/4 of the way to production.
For me, I'm actually gonna be a little bit harsher. I'm gonna give it a 4, and that's only because this movie is so boring. I was very bored for most of it. Even the scary parts weren't very standout. So yeah, I'm going to be a little bit harsher on it and give it a 4 because the movie to me was very, very boring. I was yawning a lot throughout it, and even the scary parts weren't scary. They were very like baby's first ghost movie type scares. A lot of it relied on like, aren't old dolls scary? Like, isn't this shot of an old doll freaky? So for me, I was meh.
I think at one point you actually did yawn and went boo or something like that, like look how scary, but immediately after you yawned.
Yeah, so yeah, it's a 4 for me. Not the best movie I've ever seen. So now let's go 1 to 10. How much did you enjoy it?
This one's weird because like I don't even know, like I didn't hate it, like, but I don't like it. It wasn't a bad movie, I was just bored. Mm-hmm. So like a 3.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, that feels too low. That feels like it means I hate the film. I have almost no feelings about it at all, actually.
Oh, wow.
Well, because it was boring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it really does feel like they got 3/4 of the film and then had to edit out the, like, 3 scenes that would have made it make sense, you know?
Well, I think it makes perfect sense. It's just...
Or would have made it scary, I guess? I don't know.
For me, I'm going to give it a 5 because I find it atmospheric, at least. Some of the shots are very pretty. The period setting is well done. And Daniel Radcliffe, even though he has not a lot to say during the movie because he spends most of the movie looking kind of perturbed, at least it was pretty to look at in parts. So yeah. I'm going to give it a 5. So now on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary was it?
1.
Yeah.
It was like, oh no, it's a spooky ghost lady. Bye. It was like... There was, like, one jump scare that made me actually jump, which was the mucky marsh face. But, like, it's entirely atmospheric, and it's not connected enough together to make the atmosphere, like, critically spooky. We have seen a couple movies where the atmosphere has been enough for me to be like, ooh, but, like...
Not this.
No, this was just, like, this could have been any gothic film of any genre. The atmosphere-wise, so.
Yeah, totally. For me, also a 1. Not scary. Thumbs down.
I like how that was your whole comment. I was like, here's my thoughts, and you were like, no, it's just not scary.
It's not. It is.
You're not wrong. I understand completely.
Like, if you're scared by spooky faces suddenly appearing and screaming, then I guess this is the movie for you. But I've seen that type of thing so many times at this point that it is just boring.
Yeah. We looked up one of the reviews after and it called it traditional to a fault, which I think is a good description. Like, there really is nothing...
They play it way too safe.
Yeah, there's nothing new to be offered.
No, no. So that was our episode on The Woman in Black. What an episode it was.
Not to be confused with Lady in the Water, which in my brain it still is sort of smushed
with. Never to be confused by anybody but Vicky.
I'm the only person with this problem.
Join us next time when we cover It Part 1.
Going back to the Stephen King classics.
Going back to Stephen King classics. Looking forward to that.
In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach us on Twitter or Instagram at ScaredyPodcats, because we're a podcast with cats. You probably heard them rustling around, the little gremlins.
Yeah, loud as shit, these cats today.
It could be worse. I think in one of the early episodes, Joan just sat there and meowed for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways.
You can also email us at scaredycatsthepodcast@gmail.com. And until then, I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvet.
And I'm Thomas J. Sotvet. Thank you so much for listening, and be cool to each other.